lately there have been reports coming from Afghanistan about presence of Islamic State, which is also locally called Daesh. For months, the existence of such group was denied by Afghan authorities. However, today it became part of daily news coverage in the country. Keeping our target region in mind, we would like to look into the presence of Daesh in northern parts of Afghanistan to find out what attracts them there, who are they, and what does it mean to the security of the region at large. To discuss the subject, I'm pleased to have two distinguished guests from Afghanistan, parliamentarians Shukriya Barakzai and Nihat Ahmed. Also from Kabul, Tomas Rutik, who is the director of Afghanistan Analysis Network. From the studio here in Prague, our Central Asian expert, Bruce Panier, is joining me. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Over the next 30 minutes, we will be also using comments from local commanders who are engaged in fighting with Daesh in close proximity to borders with Tajikistan and Turkmenistan. Also, opinions from Governor of Kunduz Province, Mohammed Omar Safi. So let me begin with the sad news about the killing of 12 Afghan soldiers on March 12 in Dasht-e-Archi district of Kunduz Province in the hands of the militants. So Dasht-e-Archi is one of the five other districts in Kunduz where presence of Daesh is reportedly prominent. So in fact, earlier, a local Arbaki commander who is fighting against Daesh in Dasht-e-Archi district of Kunduz told me that the district became center of Daesh in biggest town of the district, which is called Molla Kuli, is effectively under their control. Here's what the commander, who goes by the name of Mumin, had to say about the ground realities there.
Since foreign forces transferred the security responsibilities to Afghans, it has been 1 year since then. So from the last 1 month, we also witnessed increased activities of Daesh militants in the Mullah Kuli town of Dasht-e-Archi district in Kunduz province. Mullah Kuli is the biggest town in the Dasht-e-Archi district. The entire Mullah Kuli is under their control. They are the present in Kelbach. Also, in several other villages of Imam Sahib district. Their main centers are in Dasht-e-Archi and Chardi districts. They are also present in Gordepe, Khanabad, and Kalai Zal districts.
So the village Molla Kuli is only 4 kilometers away from Tajik border. Now let's go to the Turkmen-Afghan border, where I spoke to another commander from Kaysar district of Feria province, who goes by the name of Bobby Commander. Here's what he had to say earlier.
Currently, the village is under the militants' control. They collect taxes from people. I heard a few days ago that shopkeepers were forced to pay 10,000 each in taxes. There are 760 shops in the Shah. Among the militants, there are people from ISIS, IMU, also Taliban.
How do you know if they are indeed from ISIS?
They have ISIS flags hanging. There are people who speak Arabic. There are also people from Chechnya, and there are nearly 70 Uzbekistani militants living with their families in Shah. They have moved to the village from Waziristan.
So in fact, the commander was talking not about entire Kaiser, but a village called Shah district. My guests from Afghanistan would know what I'm talking about here. So let's go directly to our guests in Afghanistan. Ms. Shukriya Barakzai, how the ground reality in northern Afghanistan does looks like from where you are?
Thank you. The ground reality in Afghanistan entirely. Of course, the Islamic State is a new threat. Which is, I think it will be an opportunity because the amount of money that they pump in Afghanistan, they can easily increase their fighters, particularly when the peace process is going to be start and their division will make them because of different points of view about the peace process between local Taliban. So it's easy for them to go and join the Islamic State. And, and beside of that, of course, Afghanistan was not been vacuumed by the extremism and from the militants properly. And that's why it gives another chance and opportunity for those groups, which is somehow they were active and some was they was disactive, to be again active. But from my perspective, from my point of view, according to the Islamic State, ideas and beliefs are much different than Afghan beliefs and ideas, because those kind of Islamic State and Islamic rules that you want to provide, it will never going to be accepted culturally and historically by the people of Afghanistan and even by those whom they are fighting inside of Afghanistan under the name of insurgency. I believe that this has been ideas to be dropped in by other countries, and that's why most of them they are foreign countries fighters rather than being Afghans fighters. I do understand the situation in north, east, south, west is not really proper at the moment, because from one side we was passing the security responsibility entirely to the Afghan National Security Force, and beside of that we have another problem with the name of let's say lack of development aid and joblessness and some domestic issues which is tying the government neck day to day. But at the meantime, there's no doubt there will be fighters, but there is another group which is can stand and fight against this Islamic State. First, the grassroots, the people, and second, the government of Afghanistan. This is what I believe.
Right. In both of those subjects, we will be coming back later, Ms. Shukriya Barakzai. First, let me go to Ms. Nahid Ahmed. You heard the commanders from northern Afghanistan, the ones who are engaged practically on the ground fighting against the IS and Daesh militants, as it's called, in Afghanistan. So what is your opinion? What you had to say about the way the commanders presented the situation in northern Afghanistan?
First of all, let me say that my name is Nahid Farid. Let me correct that, by the way.
Right, sorry for that.
I couldn't be angry more with my colleague that how it is possible to wage jihad in Afghanistan, in a country that is 99% Muslim, you know. They cannot find root in this country, but still we have a weak government and we have lack of government representation in some areas that Taliban exists. So they can be presented in some areas, but Afghan people never let them to live in their villages and do all those brutalities. Beside of that, you know that ISIS can be dangerous if they can find a network between Afghanistan and Central Asia and Southern Asia. They can have this network and they can find their activities, and they can chain it, that would be dangerous for Afghan citizens.
Right.
Another issue is important about ISIL, and I heard in Commander's comments, it was that, okay, this group is a different group. They don't follow the Al-Qaeda approach. They follow the Taliban approach, and they can be joined because Taliban want to have a government. They are not a movement. They want a territory. ISIS is also the same. They follow the same route that is kind of dangerous and also a kind of warning to Afghan decision makers. And additionally, you know, from psychological point of view, many groups in this area, I mean, in northern part of Afghanistan, in southern part of Afghanistan, in Central Asia, and also in Peshawar, that they have this pamphlet that they publish. There are groups that they have never been taken serious, you know. They show their allegiance to ISIS just because they want to draw attention, and this is also a little bit dangerous, and we have to take this under the consideration. But I have to insist on Afghan people that they never want to be the host of such a brutal group.
Ms. Nahid and Ms. Shukriya Barakzai, both of you raised the question that the culture of this group is something that Afghan people will not accept that. But there is a counter argument, parliamentarians, that When Al-Qaeda first arrived to Afghanistan, again, the same opinions were presented that they are something alien to Afghan people. But again, they found ultimately a place, footprint in Afghanistan, and they, as a result of that, you have seen lots of international tragedies have taken place in the days later. Mr. Rutik, how dangerous is this group become in that part of the country, in northern Afghanistan?
I'm afraid I have not heard a lot of what members of the panel have said before. Let me just be a little bit general. At first, I think we need to do the first step before we do the second step. I personally, after looking together with my organization into the cases of sightings of so-called fighters of IS or ISIS in Afghanistan, we have looked at the different cases, and we actually have only found three of all of them. That there were local groups who either have been Taliban before or have been Islami, that they have declared allegiance to the Islamic State. It's very important to say, because it means that there are local groups who want to attach themselves to the Islamic State. It's not so yet that the Islamic State becoming active in Afghanistan itself and actively recruiting people. I also have to say we need to be very, very careful when we hear local security commanders think about these incidents. With all respect, when it is said that people who are Arabs or Chechens or Central Asians, that was exactly the argument used over the last 12 years, are saying these are people from Al-Qaeda. Do we have to make a distinction? Do we talk about Al-Qaeda or do we talk about new people? I think it's not enough just to say these people don't speak Afghan languages, they use black flags. We know that there are groups in the south of the country are often changing the flag, sometimes using the white flag of the Taliban, sometimes black flags which are not necessarily identical with the Islamic State. We also, if there goes to your question, need to make a differentiation between the acceptance of IS and Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. When Al-Qaeda came up in Afghanistan, it was after the war against the Soviets, where the Afghans have been welcoming to an extent the help of Arab fighters in their struggle against the Soviets. But on a different situation, IS now is known what it does in the Near East. And this, and there I agree with what has been said before, are not compatible with the culture of Afghans. I do not see a big danger, at least in the moment, that IS will win bases in Afghanistan.
You say, Mr. Rutik, that you do not see any danger from the group, whatever that might be. Some call it Daesh, some members of Uzbekistan Islamic Movement, and several other groups, Chechens and Arabs. It is hard to pinpoint their identities, of course, because of the security situation in that part of the world. But from the comments of those commanders that they spoke to us, we read two things, actually. First, their size in strength, which is, according to them, is increasing, and also some idea about identities, which is still not clear, I would say, but at least there are some foreign militants, which sounds like the bulk of them are the ones who came from Central Asia, and they are expanding. Again, I'm going to play here one more comment from the commander who is called Bobby, who is fighting against these militants close to the Afghan-Turkmenistan border. Here he had to say to me earlier.
Yes, after capturing Shah, they moved to several villages such as Gora, Zeredgar, Doymaz. Now all of these villages are under their control. Today the distance between Kaisar and the militants are only 2 kilometers.
From my discussion with the other commander, who is in Dasht-e-Archi district of Kunduz province, close to the Tajikistan border, I also understand that these militants are also expanding there. For instance, the commander who's called Momin, he told me that the number of those militants whom he calls is member of Daesh said in the region is around 1,000 people in Dasht Erciyen or surrounding places. Again, Bobby commander from the Turkmen-Afghan border, he also mentioned number of those foreign militants together with the Taliban in and around Kaisar district, as well as Shah in several other villages that Commander Bobby mentioned, all close to the Turkmenistan border, somewhere to 1,000 militants. Let me add here, these numbers are not officially confirmed by the Afghan authorities, but authorities do express concern, in fact, serious concern about deteriorating security situation, including about presence of Islamic State militants and foreign militants in northern Afghanistan. So the question is, in the past, northern Afghanistan considered to be one of the most peaceful places. The fact that those militants are coming, capturing the village after a village, it raises a question why they are coming to northern Afghanistan, especially the ones originally who are from Central Asia. Ms. Barakzai, would you like to comment on that?
Yes. Unfortunately, since Cold War, there is a strong and deep connection between Islamist militants in Central Asia and also in Afghanistan during the Jihad time and after that. And time to time, even those times that you say that the north part of the country in Afghanistan was safe, even at that time we remember the tragedies which is caused by Central Asian militants to those parts. And a lot of life was been costed by them. Actually, because of the relationship before 1991, during the Soviet time, still it's very strong between many countries, between Afghan fighters and between Central Asian fighters. But in the meantime, the shared border with the Central Asia country, the north part of the country, is also one of the reasons that how they can come quick and easy, and because of the similarity between the languages and between the look and also the connections, these are a kind of opportunities which is made for the militants to come. But the most important one is, first of all, we don't have the exact number of the Islamic State fighters within Afghanistan. If we say 10,000 in one village or one district, I think they can occupy that, which is still not. In the meantime, the lack of leadership in Afghan, Afghan National Security Force, because they didn't take those concerns seriously, which is it has been facing since 3 years till now. The third issue is, unfortunately, whenever is the extremist ideas, they can easily collect sympathy. But culturally, they will never going to be accepted by the community. And right now, for those militants, it's a good opportunity, since I mentioned before, for them to take extra and fresh militants to be with them. It's just because they start, the government of Afghanistan start a new chapter of the, peace process within Afghanistan, and also it's an idea that maybe some part of the Taliban will not accept this kind of peace process. So it will give a chance for them to increase their numbers. But when it comes to Al-Qaeda and their footprints in Afghanistan, they never been accepted by the people of Afghanistan. But yes, there was a kind of opportunity which has been provided for them. And it's just during the Civil War and after that.
Right. Bruce Panier, thank you. You are patiently waiting for your turn here in Prague. So you are, as a Central Asian expert, what do you see the reason behind the gathering of the, at least bulk of, Central Asian militants among the fighters in northern Afghanistan lately? How is it seen from Central Asia?
Well, of course, the governments there are quite alarmed at this threat. I think, you know, the part of the problem for the Central Asian governments is the fact that this threat is being hyped so much, by the Russians, for one, and others, you know, the we know that the Islamic State, for instance, has a great social network presence that extends even to some extent into Central Asia. So the threat might be perceived as being more than it actually is. However, and I'm hoping that we can get some comments from some of our Afghan guests. I would point out that, you know, as far as concerns northern Afghanistan, it's probably no coincidence that we hear these stories and that this Islamic State group might be present there, because just because of the fact that there are Central Asians, and traditionally when you think of Afghan government or the Taliban for that fact, you're thinking of Pashtuns and to some extent Tajiks. So, you know, it's a little bit easier for a foreign group to come in and get and meet with groups like the Turkmen and Uzbeks of northern Afghanistan, who haven't played a very strong role in the Afghan government or really in the Taliban insurgency for that fact. They're somewhat, you know, they're straight a little bit away from the rest of the people. So that would be the obvious place to start. I would also like to comment, because we've already heard that a lot of these people have money. You know, certainly in 1999, when the Islamic Movement of Uzbekistan showed up in the mountains of southern Kyrgyzstan, I had talked to a lot of people who had come out of the villages, and they said again and again that these people showed up with a lot of money, and it to some extent it helped them not become friends exactly, but it helped them be accepted in the villages that they had captured temporarily, because they were willing to spend freely, buy things for several times the price that people normally paid, and if the villagers didn't exactly accept them, they weren't anxious to throw them out at the same time. So I think that's part of the problem that we have in northern Afghanistan, and that's something the Central Asian governments are worried about, is that you know, it might be possible to attract ethnic Turkmen, ethnic Uzbeks, and ethnic Tajiks in northern Afghanistan to a cause like this, because they don't feel that they're really so much, they're neither part of a Taliban insurgency or that much of a part of the Afghan government at this point.
Our guests from Afghanistan, I see that there is an opinion exist in the country that although they are present, but they are not as big threat as it might be, you know, painted on the media. But again, I will go back to the commanders, what they say about the threat and what they see about the ultimate goal of these fighters in that region. Again, here I'm going to play the Momin commander who is fighting against these fighters in the Dasht Archi district of Kunduz province. And when asked whether he see any kind of effort on behalf of those militants to expand into or threaten to Central Asian countries, and hear what he had to say to me earlier.
داعشون دارن منطقه برد پاکستان تهران 4 کیلومتر بعد بره یوقتر اونجا.
The distance between Mulla Kulli and Tajik border is around 4 kilometers. They have all sorts of weapons. Obstacle between Tajikistan and those militants are only several Afghan soldiers positioned in between. Last time they tried to move to Tajik border was 2 months ago. Then the Afghan army came and pushed them back. Since then, security post was established close to Tajik border. Lately, there is almost a daily clash between militants and Afghan security forces.
Here I have to add one more, actually, news that is coming out from Tajikistan. Central Asia Online, that's the news agency, quoted the Tajikistan Interior Ministry saying that there are nearly 1,000 Islamic State militants active in Afghan Tajik border. When I was talking to the commander who goes by the name of Bobby, active in the Afghan Turkmen border, about the threat that it is posing to the region and also Turkmenistan, here's what he had to say to me earlier.
Hemmesi degip tur alan yerleri ve kulli Turkmenistan'ın serhadadının ihtiyarı.
The villages taken by militants are attached to the Turkmen border. Today, all areas in the Afghan side of the Turkmen border are under the control of Daesh.
I will come back, Ms. Nahid, to you. Then, you know, that's a fact that there are fighters, and bulk of them are from Central Asia. What do you see their ultimate goal is by gathering in northern Afghanistan?
Let me point to the issue you mentioned earlier about Al-Qaeda and Taliban came to Afghanistan, people welcomed them. People of Afghanistan didn't welcome Taliban as a group of insurgency. They welcomed Taliban as a group that they thought they can help them to get out of the civil war and all those
power islands that we were witnessing all around Afghanistan. You know, it was such a difficult situation for Afghan people. At that point, Afghan people welcomed Taliban just until the time that they swore allegiance with Al Qaeda, and they find out that these people, this group of people are insurgency group. And about your question, you know, from in one hand we have Pakistan, and Pakistan, you know, and it is a belief that they are helping and fundraising many militants and insurgency groups that can be treating Afghan people and Afghan citizens, and it is not now a fact. They have a pamphlet by the name of Fatah. And ISIS is publishing this Fatah pamphlet in Peshawar in local language. But they have some existence in that area. They have another existence in northern Afghanistan, I mean in Uzbekistan and Tajikistan area. It is believed that several senior ISIS members are Kazakh, they are in Central Asia, they have, and also we have Sabiris in Jamaat, in Islamic group that they swore allegiance to ISIS. So they want to have some kind of network between Central Asia and South Asia, I mean, between Pakistan and Uzbekistan and Tajikistan. And Afghanistan is a good route. It's dangerous. I mean, it's not. We shouldn't say that they are not dangerous. We should understand that they want to do that, and we have to prevent them. But now we have hostages under the group of ISIS that in Kabul that we really don't know if they are ISIS or not, but they are showing their presence in many areas of Afghanistan.
Ms. Knight, first of all, maybe I was misunderstood. Let me clarify that about the Al-Qaeda. So I did not say that Al-Qaeda was welcomed to Afghanistan, but what I mean is, despite that they were called as an alien to Afghanistan, at the end they were able to find a footprint in Afghanistan among the Taliban. This was my point. Sorry if that was misunderstood in that way. Although Afghan authorities at the beginning, they sounded or they pretended that this is not a serious group or serious news, which is about the presence of ISIS in Afghanistan. But later when we had a discussion with the governor of Kunduz, Mohammed Omar Safi, it sounds like they are also taking serious, and they have some idea what those militants might be planning in the region, what their intention might be. Here, let me play audio cut from the Mr. Safi, then we will continue about what the Afghan government is really doing to tackle this problem.
The fikir kuma che de Daesh delchaspi aw de mawjoodiyat de Taharna Tahar Badakhshan aw Kunduz ke khuraz tiata zakada che.
In my opinion, the reason why Daesh is interested in Kunduz, Takhar and Badakhshan provinces are the provinces which have border connection with Tajikistan. And borders are full of forest and easy to hide terrains. So therefore, this region is very strategic for those militants that they can pass to other regions.
I also want to add to this comment. I think in the first week of January, the chief of Afghan land forces, General Murad Ali Murad, if I'm correct about his name, he also confirmed actually the presence of IS there. And he also said that I hear that the Central Asian countries in Russia is concerned about this development in that part of the country. And he said they have a reason to be concerned. This is something that all countries need to tackle. So, Mr. Thomas Rutik, what the Afghan government is doing to tackle this problem?
Well, in the moment, I can't really see this, that the Afghan government has been reacting to a specific Daesh threat. I think we're still in the phase where it needs to be analyzed who we are talking when we're talking about the militants in northern Afghanistan. As I said before, this is we have been looking at and where we have really seen traces of the Islamic State in southern Afghanistan, not in northern Afghanistan. I have the impression from what you're hearing from the northern provinces that we mainly have to do are confronting fighters of the Islamic movement of Uzbekistan, which has been pushed out of the Pakistani tribal areas as a result of the operations by the Pakistani military. And when we hear these figures of thousands or even 10,000 in single districts in northern Afghanistan, I would be really careful, also if I were the Afghan government, to take that seriously. I'm not saying this is not a threat, but I think the threat is exaggerated and probably there's at least one zero too many in the end of these figures. If you have 1,000 fighters or even 10,000 fighters, you probably can take a provincial capital. It would be by far the biggest armed group in that area. And I frankly have not seen that village after village, as it has been said in one of the earlier reports, falling into northern Afghanistan. And if we have thousands of people over there, together with families, with women, and with children, that also needs to be mentioned because they have been pushed out of Pakistan and don't have a there anymore. So these thousands or 10,000, if these figures are halfway correct, do not only include fighters, that's for sure. So, but what's really important is that the Afghan government watches this and sees how also the relationship between Taliban and other militant groups develops in that area and then draw its conclusions.
Right. Mr. Rutik, let me correct that there is a 10,000 number is flying around. I think that number is coming from a commander who's called Bobby. He's fighting militants in Kaisar district of Faria province. He says, he is saying 1,000. He said 1,000 militants are there. If there was a misunderstanding, let me correct it here. And then the second thing was, about the proximity of the location that these militants are holding in that part of the country. And he also said that we were talking about this village called Shah. And according to this commander, again, I'm saying we have no independent source confirming that. There is no official source confirming that. According to this commander, he say the village that's called Shah is effectively under the militants who make up Taliban, IS, and Islamic Momentum Uzbekistan. Actually, Bruce Panier, you just put out a piece on that subject a few days ago. Again, to not go back to that subject, let's stick with the reaction of the Afghan government. Ms. Barak say, does Afghan government think that this is a serious issue and there is a need, something to be done about this? If that is the case, what they are doing? Ms. Barakzai is gone, I believe. Ms. Nahid, let me put the same question to you.
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Afghan government is fighting against insurgencies. And we have Afghan National Army and our forces are taking the operations independently. They really want to take the security of Afghan citizens. But, Afghan government, besides of the security point of view, had a failure of delivering the justice and public service to the citizen in many areas, especially in southern and eastern part of Afghanistan. And this contributed to the growing space of extremism and insurgency and fundamentalism in those areas. The more we reduce the sympathy of people to this kind of activities, that spending more on development and on bringing power, building schools, building clinics, helping those people to really live in a modern and different situation, this can help to reduce the insurgency presence in many areas of Afghanistan. This is really my opinion.
Right. In one side of the border is Central Asia, at least when you read the statements that are coming from Central Asia, and then that subject is in some cases alarming. Do you think, Ms. Nahid, that there is any kind of communication between Afghan government and Central Asians to tackle this problem, because this is a common problem?
The heart of Asia is a process that Afghan government and the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Afghanistan is taking under the consideration. We work on not only about the Silk Road, but also we are working with Central Asia countries about the countering extremism activities. And Afghan government and Minister of Foreign Affairs with the countries in Central Asia like Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, we are committed even on the paper, and we signed that we really want to counter such kind of activities, not only ISIS, any activity that can be a threat against the governments of this country. I believe there will be and there is collaboration, but it's not enough. We really want to follow it up and find out more ties and more ways to counter those kind of activities that can create the situation today and tomorrow and even the history of this citizen and this nation.
Right. I think my colleague Bruce Panier here has a question to you, Ms. Nahid. Bruce, go ahead.
Yeah, Ms. Nahid, if I could just ask you, could you more concretely speak about the level of cooperation with Central Asian governments? I mean, we see articles and we know that when there's meetings, they sign agreements on culture and transportation and things like that. But, you know, as far as it concerns security and understanding that there's three separate countries involved here, you know, on the Afghan border, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, and Tajikistan, could you give us an idea of the kind of conversations you have on security with these governments and what they might be offering you and what you might be offering them so that you can confront this common problem?
Although I'm not inside of all those diplomatic relationships between these countries and Afghanistan, but I believe that Afghanistan is really interested in this kind of diplomatic activities and relationship with Central Asia countries. We have Silk Road, we have Heart of Asia process, and also we have close relationship. Afghan government really want to have a close tie with northern countries, not only because we are neighboring countries, but because they have a kind of historical relationship with Russia, and Russia thinks that when we are hosting United States forces, we may not be interested in relationship with those countries and those regions. And Afghan government really want to have a balance between Afghanistan relationship with United States and Western countries and also Central Asia and also Russia. So this kind of fact that is at the top of our decision making in foreign affairs is one of the most important factors that we decide about our relationship. So another issue that we believe that is also a necessity that we have to have relationship, diplomatic relationship with Central Asia, is narcotic and drugs and drug trafficking that is producing and trafficking through Afghanistan to Central Asia, and it really damages the picture of this region. And all those things are at the top of our decision-making factors.
I think we lost both of our guests from Afghanistan. I just see their telephones are offline in my system. Actually, we are at the end of our discussion. Bruce, one final note about whether Central Asian governments are prepared, what they are doing actually to tackle this problem. Let's put it that way.
Ms. Nahid, already said that there's some cooperation, and certainly there's many discussions going on. My biggest concern about the Central Asians is, of course, you know, as we've already noted here, the threat of some of these militant groups is drastically exaggerated as far as their ability to have any effect on Central Asia. But it's being believed. And I think one of the biggest drawbacks we have, but really between Afghan and Central Asian relationships today, and it was mentioned earlier that there still is this lingering Cold War mentality. And I think it works both ways. There were militant groups that linked up with each other when the Soviets were there. But there's a mindset on the part of some of these Central Asian governments that Afghanistan is a problematic country. It was a problem during the and we know that the leadership in Central Asia, Karimov, for instance, Rahman, were part of the governments when the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan was going on. So they look at it as a necessary partnership to some extent, but they're also look at it as a potential problem for their own countries. And it's hard to be close to someone when you're ready to push them away at the same time or block them off. And I think this is part of the complicated relationship right now we're seeing between Central Asia and Afghanistan. It's unfortunate because it could work to everyone's disadvantage if they can't find some common ground to agree on and find, you know, certainly in the case of security, somewhere where they can say, we're going to trust each other 100%, you know, to tackle this security problem. Because, like I said, the mentality is still there in Central Asia that they know Afghanistan from the Soviet invasion. They know that it had problems during the Civil War. They know that there's been these problems now, and they're anxious to block this problem off. And traditionally, that's the Central Asian answer to security problems, is to just shut the border down and hope that the problem doesn't spread across into their country.
Right, and exactly the same thing is happening on Afghan-Turkmen border. Ms. Nahid, you know better than me that lately Turkmenistan is building fences and also digging ditches, at least in parts of Turkmen-Afghan border, which is next to Jowzjan province and Faryab province, I believe. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Ms. Nahid, for being part of the discussion. And Bruce Panier here in the studio. Thank you very much, Bruce.
Thank you, Ms. Nahid. Very interesting listening to you.
I would wish to thank Ms. Barakzai and Mr. Thomas Rutting, but we have lost them during the discussion because of the poor telephone line. So it was a fascinating discussion. I am Mohammed Tahir from Turkmen Service of Radio Free Europe. It was a pleasure talking to you.